The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
It is good to see you here. We'd like to look at this, teachers tied to God in unity. I presume I'm looking at mostly teachers here this morning, so we know what teachers are and what they look like. So we'd like to spend a little bit of time today talking about God. Who's this God? What's he like? I appreciate brevity, and I appreciate when people can say a lot in a short amount of time. I haven't learned that art very well yet. Acts chapter 17, Paul is in Greece, and he's talking to these people that they haven't been to Sunday school. These are Greeks. They're not Jews. They don't know the God of Israel. And Paul thought it important to introduce them to this God. And by the way, these are debaters and discussers and thinkers. These are the philosophy people. These are the popular mechanics subscribers, popular science subscribers. They like some new thing. So if you're a popular mechanics reader, these are your sort of people. Anyway, they said, well, here's a Jew. Let's see what he has to say. Speak. So Paul stands up and starts speaking. He says, I notice, as I was, you know, doing your whole little visitor's tour here, I noticed you've got altars to everything, sun included. I mean, you guys worship everything. And then you've got the other altar. You've got the altar to the unknown God. In case we missed anybody, here's his altar. Paul grabs that opportunity, says, I'm going to tell you about that unknown God. I'm going to introduce you to that God. So that's what we're talking about this morning. Acts chapter 17, verse 24, I'll read into the beginning of the middle of 28. Paul says, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed in the bounds of their habitation, that they might seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. Paul jumps right in, God that made the world and all things therein. He starts right in with origin. Isn't it weird? People wonder where they came from. Do crickets and caterpillars and chickens wonder where they came from? Do eggplants sit around and cogitate where they came from? See, humans are interesting that way. Paul says, God that made the world and all things therein. He jumps right in. His God is the creator and the designer. The Almighty, the Omnipotent, Unfathomable, Boundless Creator. Think about this with me. Let's just look at the creation around us a bit. This God spoke light into being. He hung the stars in space. He swirled the galaxies into Fibonacci spirals. He fabricated elements like magnesium, sulfur, chloride, argon, helium. He conceived photosynthesis to build glucose molecules. And then he made glycolysis to break them back down. He flavored raspberries and garlic and T-bone steaks. He painted stripes on the skunk, but spots on the giraffe. He scented the lilacs and the pines and Limburger and putrescine. He taught the spider to weave, and he taught the grizzly to fish. He made puppies soft, but granite hard. He filled the Baltic Sea with water, and then he taught the porpoise to swim therein. He tinted the sunset, and he tuned E major. He mapped the glide path of the maple samara as it falls from the tree, and the bald eagle as it dives for the trout. And when he had done all of that, and 10,000 times more, he reached down and scooped up dirt, and made man with kidneys that filter 4 ounces of blood per minute. What a God! What fantastic creative power! That God, Paul says, that's who we're talking about. B, seeing he is Lord of heaven and earth. This God, Paul says, not only is the creator and the designer, he's the owner of all things. He's the standard, he's the moral authority of all things. He's the definition of right and good. He's the standard by which all else is judged. Christopher Hitchens was an atheist. 2011, he published his idea that Ten Commandments are stupid. And furthermore, here would be a much better set. Well, since when does Christopher Hitchens earn the right to cast judgment on God's Ten Commandments? God doesn't need Christopher Hitchens to update the Ten Commandments. This God, Paul says, is the final arbiter of all truth. He is the supreme court. You remember Nebuchadnezzar learned that. Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar is quoted there in the last several verses. He says, "He doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, nor say unto him, What doest thou?" He owns everything. C. Dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything. Paul told the Greeks, this God is self-existent and self-defining. See, he's not a physical being. He's not bound by the laws of nature. He can't be. He created those laws of nature. He's a spirit. He's not worshipped with our hands. He's the I am that I am. He's self-existent and self-defining. Somebody asked a preacher one time, how do you define God? He said he realized later he totally missed the question. I don't define God. He defines himself. It's not up to man to define God. As God exists because of himself. See, this podium exists because of someone or a group of someone's cut down a tree, ran it through a debarker and a delimmer, and they ran it through a sawmill, and they cut it into slab wood, and they ran it through a planer and saws and joiners and whatnot, and they sanded it, and they nailed and glued and screwed it together, and they sprayed varnish over it, and they tacked carpet to the top, and they screwed a microphone into it, and they stood it up here this morning. This podium exists because of someone else. God exists because of himself. He just is. And furthermore, he doesn't need me to carve him out of marble and stand him up in the corner and feed him rice grains and pour milk over him or, you know, whatnot. And we don't have to polish the dust off of him on Saturday. He does not need my hands to take care of him. He isn't what I want him to be or what I think him to be or what I need him to be or what I wish him to be. He isn't anything because of me. He exists because of himself. He just is. He doesn't ask my opinion and then change to fit my opinion. You think how silly that would be? Because he'd be changing every couple of days according to the way we change. D. Seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things, this God is the origin, author, and giver of life. He's the origin of life. He's the only one that can sustain life. Now in Rochester, I live 5 blocks away from the Mayo Clinic, currently ranked number one hospital in America. I can sit at my dining room table, and now that the leaves have fallen off the trees, I can actually watch the helicopters land on top of the Mary Bry building. Dr. Cabrera is a fine emergency physician. Great guy. He can't sustain life. He tries. All he can do is create conditions compatible with life. He tries to create conditions favorable for life, but he can't sustain life. There are people that die in the Mayo Clinic emergency room every single day because Dr. Cabrera cannot sustain life. Only God can sustain life. And furthermore, God doesn't charge for oxygen. Did you pay your oxygen bill this morning so you can afford to breathe today? Why are you laughing, John? I mean, we don't even think about it. You're laughing because the grass and the trees around us just pump it out by the ton. We never think the second thing of it. He's the giver of life. Seeing God as the author and giver of life, this means every baby is a designed gift of God. My wife and I are excited about having another one of these. This is exciting. You know, this is a gift. You can't go to Walgreens and buy one of these. Richard Dawkins, also an atheist, this past summer, published a statement. He said that it's our moral obligation to abort any baby with Down syndrome. Pardon? Moral obligation. Where does Richard Dawkins, the atheist, come up with moral obligation? See, he's a materialist. His worldview says all that exists is what you can see. The periodic table is the basis of all of everything in the world. Well, show me the moral obligation molecule, Mr. Dawkins. And furthermore, every baby is a designed gift of God. Every human bears the stamp and image of God. Even those that can't do things, the handicapped, the abnormal, they still are born in the image of God. E, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth. Paul said, Fifthly, this God is fair and equal. He doesn't care about your skin color or your hair or lack thereof. He doesn't care who your grandfather was. Jew, Greek, male, female, barbarian, Scythian, bond free, Pennsylvanian, Manitoban. If you grew up on Wall Street or a field lane, he doesn't care which side of the Mason-Dixon you come from, or which side of the Allegheny or the Mississippi, or which side of the 49th. It doesn't matter to God. We're all equal in his sight. My money, my education, my pedigree, my experience, my great-grandfather, none of it means anything to God. See, humans, we attach value to these things. God doesn't. F, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. This God is sovereign and eternal, omniscient and purposeful. See, he has to be sovereign because he determined. Only sovereign beings can make choices. He has to be eternal because he determined before the times. He has to be omniscient and purposeful. He has to be able to know and decide to make these choices. Christ said, before Abraham was, I am. And we don't like that construction in English, but it's in this case, it's exactly correct. His values don't change with the price of propane. His laws and his morals don't expire like my passport. He's an eternal God. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday and today and forever. The date on the calendar does not change the character of God. And furthermore, this God had a plan for where and when you would be born. Ponder this with me a second. I worked for a guy once who said I came to the earth 100 years too late. I wish I'd been born in the height of the steam era. That would have been cool. Well, he said this kind of joke. Okay, we get that. But God in his wise providence looked over the course of human history. He looked at the entire scope of when humans would walk in the world and said, I need Elvin right there. That's where he needs to be. That's the place I need him to fill. That gives purpose and meaning to your life. He said, of all the times humans are going to walk on the earth, I need John right there. That's where I need him. God didn't need you in 1813. And he's not going to need you in 2146. But he needs you in 2014. See, you're not an accident. You are not a coincidence. You are not a conglomeration of molecules. You are not a biological coincidence. You are here by the will and design and purpose of the Almighty Creator. He put you here by specific design. When I realize that, that gives automatic purpose and meaning and value to my life, regardless of what I think about it. I'm still taking nursing classes. I currently have an associate's degree. I'm working toward my bachelor's degree. And some of the classes I had to take, I took a class this summer called The Theology of Death and Dying. And it's not near as bad as it sounds, okay? Anyway, we studied suicide at great length, and we read suicide notes, and that will depress you. That will get inside your head. One young man, he says, I'm a quadriplegic. I can't do things. My life is worthless. I'm of no good to the world. See, that's an American capitalism idea. Value equals production. It's not God's perspective. That's USA American capitalism. And that's the, quote, Christian nation you live in. But that's another sidebar. He says, I'm worthless. I'm of no good to the world. And so he drove his wheelchair off the top of a parking garage. The child of God does not need to face that decision. We do not need to face that kind of depression and hopelessness because God has a purpose for your life. You are here by the intention of Almighty God. Point G, that they should seek the Lord if haply they might feel after him and find him though he be not far from every one of us. This God is personal, loving, and caring. He's nearby. He's right here. We don't have to go to India to contemplate truth. We don't have to make pilgrimages to Nepal or Mecca or Lancaster or Goshen. We don't have to go somewhere to find this God. He's right here. And he wants to know you personally. He's not an impersonal force. New Age would like to say God is an energy, a power, a consciousness. They have all these terms. Well, think about that. Energy can do one thing, and that's follow the path of least resistance. And when that path of least resistance meets enough resistance that it generates heat and light, we use that energy to produce light. Energy cannot make choices. Energy can only deplete itself. Second law of thermodynamics. Furthermore, consider this. Which is greater and more complex, my 16-month-old daughter, Liesl, or the two Lego blocks she learned how to put together while I'm on this trip? Well, the answer is obvious. Well, if Liesl is much more complex than the two Lego blocks she stuck together, look around the room at the amazing, interesting, and complex people God has put you on the earth with. And know thereby he must be infinitely more complex than the people I see in this room. God cannot possibly create something greater than himself. So if we are as complex as we are, God cannot possibly be an energy. It just makes no sense whatsoever. H, for in him we live and move and have our being. This God is the sustainer of the universe. Our next breath is dependent on him. Colossians 1, 16 and 17. For by him and for him all things were made. You were made for the enjoyment of Almighty God. And then it goes, and by him all things consist. That consist means hold together. Stick together. Take gravity for one tiny example. If the strength of the sun's gravity on the earth were minuscule parts of a fraction of a percent stronger, eventually we'd be sucked into the sun and burnt up. Minuscule fractions of a percent weaker, and eventually we'd drift off into space and go to heat death. We'd freeze. Gravity is precisely tuned that for the last 6,000 years, the Earth has hung in the same orbit. We're not slowly getting closer to the sun and warming up. We're not slowly getting farther away and freezing. God has tuned this precisely to sustain life. Without the character of God this morning, I firmly believe the entire universe would collapse on itself. By him, all things consist. That, Paul said, that's the God we want to talk about. What a fantastic God. Well, the clock keeps moving, and I see Elvin has his bell by his hand. I have to keep moving. Flip your hand out over the backside. How are we supposed to be tied to this God? Teachers tied to God in unity. Okay, so we know something about God now. Well, I'm going to be tied to him. I use the illustration of a mirror. We rented a van in Denver last week and then drove over the mountains to get to Montrose. In that time, we drove through snow. And then snow and road grime coated those mirrors, and suddenly the mirrors weren't doing much good. Because, see, a clean mirror, you don't see the mirror, you see the reflection. A dirty mirror, you get some snow and road grime and salt and sand and whatnot on that mirror, and you don't see the reflection, you start seeing the mirror. Can I hold up a mirror in front of my students, in front of my daughter, in front of my patients, in front of my coworkers, my neighbors there on 3rd Street? Can I hold up a mirror that they don't see the mirror, they see the reflection of the character of God? Can I reflect to you, my brothers in the church, can I reflect the character of God this morning? Can I hold up the mirror and reflect that character of God? Let's look through this point by point as we went. A, creator. God's the creator and author and designer. How can I reflect that creatorship of God? Things like creativity. Marvel in God's creation. I come from Minnesota, the land of cornfields and cows and dirt, where we grow things. And we flew into Denver and drove for hours and hours and hours and saw nothing but rock. And I made some snide comments about this rock. I don't know how you're going to live here. And Elmer and Lester sort of guided me back to the way. And you know, God made this too. But start looking at that rock and those layers of rock and the colors. In 10 feet time, it went from white rock to red. And furthermore, there's places there's layers vertically. Well, layers don't form vertically. How'd they get there? Explain for me the hydraulic PSI required to move an entire mountain 90 degrees. Or the power of God that created it that way. Marvel in the creation of God. Take a razor blade and slice off a sliver of maple leaf and stick it under a microscope in your science class and show your students that's a chloroplast. And that makes chlorophyll, and through photosynthesis, gives the oxygen that we all enjoy breathing without thinking about it. Marvel in things like the Northern Lights and the buzz of cicadas in the summertime. My wife and I got married in June, and I moved her to Ohio. And several weeks later, she said, "Honey, what's that noise?" I said, "What noise?" "That buzz. It's driving me crazy." I said, "Oh, that's a good sound. That is proof on a daily basis that God is still on the throne and summer shall not last forever. We were pretty convinced we were going to die in the heat, but that's God's promise that fall is coming." Marvel in that buzz of cicadas. Value creativity. Value the creativity and ideas of your students. Value art. Orderly, rational, thoughtful, purposeful art. Random junk is not art. It's random junk. Random paint splatters may look attractive on a wall, but it's not purposeful art. Art should have rational thought and purpose in it. Value rational art. B, the moral standard and authority of God. How do we recognize this? Things like obedience to His authority. Things like recognizing His authority in all things. See, why do we do this? Why do we have this classroom rule, Mr. Miller? Why do we have to do this? Because I said so. What happens when you're not here to say so? Well, because Merv said so, and he's the board chairman. Or because John said so, and he's the bishop. What happens when they're not here? Can we tell our students, okay, let's discuss this for a moment. God, in His almighty wisdom, gave you to a set of parents. And He tasked those parents with raising you according to His laws and values. Those parents came to the school and said, "We need some help. Will you help us raise and educate this child according to God's laws and values? That's the job I've been given from your parents. And if I fail in that, I'm going to have to answer to God and to your parents. See, I'm accountable to others for what I allow in this classroom. It's not because I said so." And furthermore, God has tasked your church leaders with providing a spiritually safe environment. And those church leaders elected a school board. And those school board members hired a teacher. And see, I am simply a link in the authority chain, and all authority goes back to God. The buck does not stop with me. See, that feels entirely different than because I said so. Recognize the authority of God in whatever we do. All authority stems from God. See, self-existent, self-defining. We see this in worship, humility, awe. He's the self-existent and self-defining God that I won't understand, and I'm okay with that. Because if I understood God perfectly, He wouldn't be God, I would be. What did the serpent say in the garden? "You shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." Eve, you'll understand things. It was a promise the serpent didn't do so well at paying on. But recognize that God is infinitely above us. His ways are higher than my ways. His thoughts are higher than my thoughts. He is infinite. Go to Elmer's math class this afternoon and ask him to explain infinity. Humans do really, really lousy jobs of explaining and understanding infinity. We can explain the concept. It goes on forever. There's no end. We do really poorly at understanding and grasping that concept because everything we know stops at some point. Even if you sit here and cogitate infinity, eventually you're going to go to sleep. We won't always understand Him. He doesn't have to ask my permission. He doesn't have to explain to me what He does because He's God and I'm not. D, giver and sustainer of life. We see this in the sanctity of life. We see this in the respect for all human life, but held loosely. Understanding that all life comes from God and goes back to Him, and He does not owe me an explanation. 9 years ago, there was a wreck in this part of the country, and 5 children were taken without explanation or warning. And we say, why? Nickel mine school shootings, the Ash family in Kentucky, you name the disaster. Tornadoes that wipe out towns. Lord, why? He's the giver and sustainer of life, but He's the one that can take life, and He doesn't have to have my permission to do so. It does not make me very happy to think that I may never see my wife and daughter again. I have tickets to fly home from Fresno on Friday. I hope so. I hope they're waiting for me at Minneapolis. They might not be. And I have to be okay with that because He's God. And Liesl doesn't belong to me. She belongs to God. And I don't like that thought. But that's the best way she can be. Who else would I rather have her belong to than a loving, almighty, awesome God? Hold life in sanctity and holiness, but recognize it's God's. We see this in our unapologetic stance against abortion. We see this in our respect for the disabled, those who can't do things, because they still bear the image of God, regardless of how deformed or what they can't do. See, again, we have to remember, American capitalism is not a concept very favorable to that. We see this in respect for the elderly. I have a grandpa in Virginia this morning who is dying of heart failure, frankly. And if he can get from his recliner to the table for breakfast, that's about all the energy he's got for a while. Is Rob Hilty's life less valuable because he cannot rebuild diesel engines like he once did? American capitalism would say so. God says not. We see this in our stance against euthanasia. In your great state, a week ago, Brittany Maynard killed herself. And the media lauded and heralded, they tripped over themselves, calling this noble and brave and courageous. And as a hospice nurse, I watched this happen and said, God forbid. If that's noble and brave and courageous, I ask, why are you still sitting here? Because if that's so brave, the opposite must be cowardly. And if she's brave and noble and courageous, all my hospice patients must be cowardly. By definition of philosophy. Laying morality aside, I'm just talking philosophically here. We understand differently. We must understand that we live in a world that hasn't been to Sunday school. And they're not going to understand our worldview. And National Public Radio does not preach the gospel of God. And we must be very careful that we don't accept that worldview as truth. E, no respecter of persons. Is there a difference in my classroom between the child of the family who's rich and the child of the family who's poor? Does it matter if they come from the fantastically wealthy grass seed farmer or bankrupt mechanic? Does that matter to me? Does it matter if they come from a family of 12 generations of faithful Anabaptist heritage or one generation of struggling faith? Does that matter to me? Have I ever thought, we've got to be careful here, because his dad writes the checks that kind of keep this place open. Has that thought ever crossed my mind? Can we be fair in our school administration? Can we be fair in board and church administration? Think about it. Civil judges in our land would never preside over a case of a family member. Not going to happen. They could lose their job. In school administration, when it's a board member's child in trouble, can I recuse myself and say, I'm sorry, guys, take care of it. I trust you. I trust your judgment. I'm going to support you whatever you decide, but I will not be involved today because I'm too close to be unbiased. Church administration, likewise. We must move on. Sovereign, eternal, omniscient, and purposeful God, can I mirror to my students an unshakable confidence in the goodness of God? I'd like you to read you a poem this morning. Annie Johnson Flint was a poet. She was a crippled lady. She dealt with a lot of pain in life. She wrote such poems as He giveth more grace when the burdens grow greater. She also wrote this, I will not doubt. I will not doubt, though all my ships at sea come drifting home with broken masts and sails. I will believe the hand which never fails from seeming evil worketh good for me. And though I weep because those sails are tattered, still will I cry while my best hopes lie shattered. I trust in thee. I will not doubt, though all my prayers return unanswered from the still, white realm above. I will believe it is an all-wise love which has refused the things for which I yearn. And though at times I cannot keep from grieving, yet the pure ardor of my fixed believing undimmed shall burn. I will not doubt, though sorrows fall like rain and troubles swarm like bees above a hive. I will believe the heights for which I strive are only reached by anguish and by pain. And though I groan and writhe beneath my crosses, I yet shall see through my severest losses the greater gain. I will not doubt. Well anchored is this faith, like some staunch ship my soul braves every gale. So strong its courage that it will not quail to breast the mighty unknown sea of death. Oh, may I cry, though body parts with spirit, I do not doubt! So listening worlds may hear it with my last breath. The goal of Christian Light Bible curriculum in the elementary grades is singular: to instill an unshakable confidence in the goodness of God. That it does not matter what happened last night, tornado, or wrecks, or fires, or death, or disease. It does not matter what happened last night. Nothing can change the character of God. Nothing can shake my confidence that God is good, His mercy is everlasting, and His truth endures to all generations. Nothing on planet Earth can ever make the slightest difference in the character of Almighty God. G, the personal, loving, and caring God. Are we people with personality? Can I be a teacher with interests and hobbies and personality and foibles and quirks and hobbies? Can I be genuine and real to my students? Am I a computer? I spout forth facts and very little else. You'll never get to know me. Hey, Siri on my phone can give me information, but she has no personality. Can I be a teacher with personality? Can I genuinely love my students? One of my tougher days of teaching, serious violation of student conduct. Board assisted, and we dealt with the situation and moved on. Sometime later, I assigned my class a creative writing assignment. I said, write a thank you letter to any person, dead or alive, real or imagined. Write a thank you letter for something on planet Earth for which you are grateful. This young man wrote a letter to our board chairman. When I read it, I wept. He said, the way you spoke to me, I knew you loved me. The way you spoke to me when you gave me my punishment, I knew you loved me. And that's the reason I decided to become a Christian. He didn't say because my grandfather was a preacher, or because we don't have TV in our home, or because I went to Sunday school, or because we used Anabaptist curriculum in school. He didn't say any of these things, regardless of how important or valuable they might be. He said, I knew you loved me. Do my students know I love them? Because it made a difference in that man's eternity. A board member that loved him. I made copies of that page and I passed it out at the next board meeting. There's a whole bunch of board members sat around weeping. We're dealing with souls. I've been an electrician and dealt with wires. And that's fun. We're dealing with souls. Can we love them? Can we genuinely love them? See, nobody turns down real love. Last point, and I must close. Sustainer of the universe, can we see each day with awe? The awe in the eyes of a child. You see, you first and second grade teachers do really well with this. Us high school teachers need a refresher course about every Friday or so would be good. First and second grade teachers, these children just have this awe and wonder in the world. They just marvel in the world around them. My daughter, Liesl, we planted flowers in the bottom of the garden this year. Well, I say we, it's my wife's garden. And occasionally this summer I'd say, Liesl, let's go pick a flower for Mom. So we'd go down to the garden and pick a flower for Mom. And I'd say, sniff it, she'd sniff it. And she'd poke it, put it, and be gentle with it. Let's go give it to Mom. And she'd go to the house, we'd give the flower to Mom. Oh, she's so excited. By the time we get to the house, that flower's pretty beat up. It's pretty bedraggled. Knock on the door. What does Mom say when she comes? Oh, you brought a flower. Look, Papa ought to buy me a dozen of those. No, she went crazy. You brought my mom a flower. Oh, let's put it in a vase. And we put it on the table for supper. And oh, she's so happy. She claps for herself. We lose that awe and wonder in the eyes of a child. The awesomeness of our boundless God. Treat each day as a gift. His mercies are new every morning. I didn't bring up the sun this morning. The sun came up and there's oxygen to breathe. And God's still good. In closing, Mahatma Gandhi said, I like your Christ, I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ. I saw a bumper sticker once that said, I love Jesus, it's his followers I can't stand. And we can write these people off as stubborn or noncommittal, or can we say, have they been disillusioned because there's too much dirt on my mirror? Am I turning people away because there's away from the gospel and away from Christ because there's too much grime and lust and pride and greed and dollar signs and anger and malice? What is it on my mirror? Can I present a mirror to my children, to my daughter, to my patients, to my co-workers, to my students, to my brothers and sisters in the church that's clean, that they just see the reflection of the Master?
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.